Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis Hornsby, and today we're going to talk about the changes coming to Grad Plus loans and to financing degree programs in 2026 this fall. This is going to be of particular interest if you're currently enrolled in a graduate degree program, and it's also going to be of great interest if you know anyone who is enrolling in one of those programs, or that you might have somebody that is going to be asking you for advice on what to do, potentially, because that happens, right? A lot of people from college will reach out to folks they know, friends of friends, right? Hey, my nephew's going to dental school this fall. Do you have any recommendations for her, right? Like, that's a common, I think, reach out that happens if you're in a particular profession. And this episode's going to allow you to be informed, to know what to tell people. So the first big thing to know is Grad Plus is being eliminated, but there's a phase in of eliminating it. And the new borrowing limits are going to be one of two amounts. It's going to be $20,500 for people that are in a graduate degree program, and then $50,000 per year for people that are in a professional degree program. Now, professional degree program is defined very narrowly. So for example, vets, dentists, chiropractors, physicians, lawyers, etc. qualify for the $50,000 per year limit. But weirdly, nurse practitioners, PAs, physical therapists only qualify for the $20,500 per year limit. There's also a lifetime limit of $257,500, I believe. That's across all loans. And the limits apply to anybody who has not already taken out a loan before July 1st, 2026 for the program of study they're currently enrolled in. Now, the really crazy restriction in place with this is if you take a leave of absence for any reason after July 2026, that causes you to lose access to Grad Plus and those phased in or phase out of the Grad Plus program borrowing limits that are unlimited. So essentially what's going to be happening the next 3 years is there's going to be sort of what I would call an orphaned group of borrowers. It's going to be a large group of borrowers, and it's going to be a very strange sort of setup, because what's going to happen is you have people being allowed to borrow Grad Plus with unlimited borrowing amounts. So there's people that, for example, are entering their second year of dental school right now. They've already borrowed $150,000 for NYU or USC. They will be allowed to take out another $150,000 a year for the next 3 years until they graduate, I guess, in 2030, if my math is right. No, 2029. They will come out of school with, you know, $700,000 of student loans, except unfortunately for those folks, they're not going to have access to the pay-as-you-earn or new IBR program. They're only going to have access to the RAP program, the Repayment Assistance Plan. Now, of course, if you're borrowing dental school or vet school, out-of-state, private vet school, private medical school-sized loans, you know, you're going to have probably a debt-to-income ratio that's really high. Maybe not as much the case for medical school. Some of those really high debt-to-income ratios are not unable to be paid back. They're not insanely high, I mean. But for, you know, certainly a lot of dentists and veterinarians and some lawyers, the debt-to-income ratios are pretty nuts and pretty high. And so those folks are going to be stuck with 30-year repayment assistance plan or bust. That's going to be their only option unless, you know, income-driven repayment plan rules change long-term. And if you think about a 30-year repayment period, that really makes the math ugly. Imagine being a high-income dental practice owner and being stuck paying, you know, 10% of your income for 30 years. That is not appetizing. So that's going to cause the importance of student loan planning for that, like, weird orphan generation of those 3 years in between these loan limits fully go into effect. That's going to create for some very strange situations where people have to make these financial decisions to optimize loan forgiveness because they just don't have another viable option that's decent. So that's kind of interesting. We'll be busy helping that group of folks at least until 2029, and then who knows who wins the White House. I like to joke that if student loans ever become super simple, I'm going to go open a telescope shop in the mall because I love doing amateur astronomy. It's my big hobby in life. I've got way more telescopes than I should. They're cheaper than motorcycles. Don't worry. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, how expensive is that one? Whenever I'm showing like Stars to the public, you definitely have something that's more expensive than this. It's kind of like unreasonably expensive to spend on a telescope probably, but it's, you know, everybody has their vices. Some people it's fancy bourbon, some people it's Birkin bags, mine's telescopes. Anyways, so if student loans get super, super simple, then yeah, maybe I don't need to do a weekly SLP podcast anymore. Maybe I need to go, like I said, just talk about the stars or, you know, globular clusters or galaxies or something like that. But unfortunately, I think it's going to stay, or maybe fortunately for me, who knows, but it's going to stay complicated, I think. I like to share that I'm super blessed to be able to do this because I enjoy doing it, not because I have to. It's fun helping people. It's fun helping people have impact on their lives and just helping people live their best lives. And if you're a longtime listener to this podcast, thank you. I'm very blessed to be here with you on this journey. Some thoughts about this is grad plus loans, I mean, to be real honest, have allowed something like SLP to need to exist because people have really high debt to income ratios. You know, a lot of people self-provision on our website, right? And they apply for the refinancing links. We never talk to them and they get great bonuses and great. We serve them well and we don't need to make plans for them in many cases. Some people still reach out to us that are paying back their loans because they want to optimize things like, you know, what should I pay first? Like, should I pay down my mortgage faster? Should I pay down my student loans? Some people reach out for those kind of plans that are not going for forgiveness. You know, a lot of people reach out because they have like a 3-to-1 debt to income ratio and they're like, oh my gosh, like how do I deal with this and not end up in the poorhouse one day? People just need to think, okay, like there's all these new rules that are going into place. If you're an existing borrower, a lot of it doesn't impact you. Some of it does. But anyways, so for the folks who are going to school this fall, for the first time, those folks are going to be limited to these borrowing limits. So let's say you're a first-year student trying to go to NYU or USC, and you're trying to attend those programs, and they don't slash their prices, you're not going to get underwritten for that, probably. I mean, $150,000 for no cosigner for 4 years for a degree that you might make $150,000 your first year out, maybe a little more, maybe $200,000, right, if some places. But if you're having that level of debt, like some people are not going to get underwritten with the private loan system. And if that's the case, then what does that mean? A lot of people who get acceptances will not be able to accept them. And to the extent that there are people who get rejected from USC or NYU Dental historically, or, you know, any, I'm using them as a bogeyman, but basically you could say any high cost private school or out of state program. A lot of these folks that get off the wait list or get into these programs at these more expensive schools are going to be people from kids from wealthier families that will be able to just write checks to maximize revenues for these programs. And that's unfortunate, right? You want the best people to get in and be able to attain the dream of the degree. And, you know, the new setup is just, it's not no longer going to be as accessible to people, right? Like $50,000 a year. I don't know any dental school in the country you can go to for $50,000 a year if you include living expenses. So that means everyone is going to need private student loans for, you know, most dental and vet schools. Some people will be able to get away with living at home. Some people will have some savings they can use. Some people will have family loans that they'll take out. But, you know, the reality is most people attending professional school starting in the fall to that 2026 that are not already enrolled and have not already taken a loan, they're going to need access to private student loans. Now, we have tried to prep ourselves to help people in this market. We have a marketplace on our website. If you go to studentloanplanner.com/private, that'll take you to our spot for you to comparison shop private student loans. And what I expect this first fall is it's going to be chaos. All the big lenders are going to have no idea what interest rates should be. They're not going to know what the cosigner requirements should be or not be. I've heard from some lenders they're not going to require cosigners for dental or medical students, but they will require cosigners for other programs. So you're going to see stuff that just makes no sense. Like you're going to see some lenders require a cosigner for an in-state dental student borrowing $10,000, and you know that's going to have a 1-to-1 debt to income ratio after graduation, and you're going to have other programs that are probably going to give out loans to people that maybe should need a cosigner in terms of the risk. I mean, I would say probably most lenders, though, just to be fair, most lenders are going to be too conservative this first fall because they're not used to these risk models. They're not used to these underwriting models, right? Like most lenders, you have to keep in mind, 90% of the private student loan market until this coming fall is to undergrads with parents as co-signers. That's like the typical market. And there's really two types of borrower in that category. One type of borrower is just trying to get a lower interest rate than what they can get through Parent Plus. And that's a decent amount of people, but it's not a huge amount of people because people are often like either rich enough to pay cash, or if they're not rich enough to pay cash, they end up just wanting to do Parent Plus because it's just an easier process and they don't have to do as much work to apply, you know, for just a 1% lower interest rate or something along those lines, right? So the rate shoppers are not a huge group of people for undergrad loans. The bigger group of people, to be honest, is for whatever reason, people that don't want to have Parent Plus loans because maybe the parents want their children to be on the hook for it. Or maybe the child needs somebody that's not a parent to be a co-signer because their parent can't be. Or a lot of times, a shocking amount of private loan volume is issued just because people don't fill out the FAFSA, which is kind of terrible for people that have that impact. But, you know, a lot of people just don't fill out the FAFSA and they want to attend school. And it's like last second, and they're like, all right, I need $10,000 to cover my associate degree, you know, and so I got to just take out a private student loan to do it. I think that like the typical profile, especially with the interest rates that I've seen for private student loans for undergrads, the typical risk profile of the borrower who takes these is higher. It's lower credit quality. It's higher interest rates. The risk profile of people who take out loans for professional school is going to be a lot stronger. It's going to be, you know, in a lot of cases, people that are going to make a ton of money one day. It's going to be people with near prime credit scores or, you know, really strong credit profiles. And the underwriting models, I don't think, will have caught up to that yet. And importantly, lenders are going to need to see data to feel comfortable making certain kinds of loans to be willing to do it in the future. So they're probably going to want to experiment this year one, year two, kind of see what happens with the payback assumptions and before they loosen things up and say, okay, we'll do no co-signers for XYZ degree type, right? So what that's going to mean is you're going to need to shop around a lot, or anybody who goes to professional school this coming fall that's not grandfathered into the Grad Plus limits is going to need to shop around with multiple different lenders to try to find one that fits what they need. And that might be, you know, a long repayment term when you come out of graduation, right? Like a 15-year versus a 10. It might be deferral options if you're in a residency program after graduation. It might be interest rate. It might be cosigner requirements. There's going to be a lot of things that like impact your decision on the student loan side of things. We're trying to get into that to help people. studentloanplanner.com/private if you need to shop around for rates. Now, we are also trying to help folks on the planning side, on coming up with the student loan plan prospectively. Like, how do I finance my degree? What's the best way to do it? Right now, we're not really differentiating the cost or the booking link from what's already on our website. So you can just use the regular book a student loan plan link, even if you have not borrowed anything yet. And we have a whole separate analysis tool that has been that I've built to try to help people figure out, like, how do I take out the right kind of loans to fund my degree if I'm not eligible for Grad Plus? So we built that into the same workflows and processes for our consults for existing borrowers. So that'll be interesting to see if there's demand for that service. I'm not sure if people will want to pay for that service or if people would rather essentially have a model where they're paying kind of indirectly through financing private student loans through our website, like you would through disability insurance brokerage. So I'm not really sure what the model is going to look like, right? Like, will there be private student loan brokers that, you know, only get paid if you end up closing on a loan with them? Will it be a fee for service model, like, you know, a kind of a fee based system? I don't know. I'm not sure about that. The thought process I have is when we get into any kind of affiliate marketing space, can I get people better deals being directly involved in this space than if I was not having advertisers on the website? By having cash bonuses on private student loans, I'm able to see a little bit more details on what rates people are getting across different lenders, able to have better information on which ones people should apply to, and able to get people better deals than if they just went and applied on their own and probably they would check one lender and get a worse rate. So it'll be kind of fun to see if we're able to add value in the private student loan space and people that are going to school. I think we probably will. So excited to share updates on that with folks. Now, for people who, again, are currently second year to fourth year students this fall, do not take a leave of absence. You must complete your program. Otherwise, you'll lose access to Grad Plus and you might not even be able to finish your degree if you can't finance it through a private student loan if you took a leave of absence. So no more leave of absences for any reason. this fall if you're an existing or if you're a current borrower that you're not done with school yet and you're in your second to fourth year of your program. And again, if you're a rising first year, if you know somebody that is, they're going to need private student loans because they will not be able to finance their degree. Now, here's an example of the chaos that's coming to all these programs this fall. The Doctor of Physical Therapy degree, DPT, right? That was a requirement that got raised, like it got put into place, right? We're going to require people to do the DPT to become physical therapists. That is very much in response to Grad PLUS loans and those Grad PLUS loans being available on an unlimited basis. I mean, that is why it occurred. It's because every program was able to use their physical therapy program to make it a cash cow with the Grad PLUS loans and finance, you know, all these other programs at their university that don't make money. Are physical therapy programs going to close en masse, or will the market price be charged for physical therapy programs that people are able to actually finance? And then will that cause all these other programs that are not profitable to go out of business because you don't have the cash cow subsidizing the money-losing departments anymore? Or will the whole university close because it was barely breaking even as is? And so if you drop all the, you know, price for the physical therapy program and you're not able to finance those other degree programs, does that cause like a death spiral for some of these colleges? I mean, I think it's undeniable that you're going to see an uptick in the number of colleges that are going to close due to this legislation. There's a demographic crunch. There's fewer babies being born, right? At the high end of this scale, that doesn't really impact them very much because they're going to fill all the seats regardless. If you're like a UVA, UNC, like Harvard, Yale, like those sort of Stanford, like those elite programs are always going to fill every seat that they've got. But your, you know, kind of mid-tier to low-tier program that's like not nearly as selective but doesn't have a lot of state support, you know, those are the kind of programs and colleges that are just going to go out of business and have to shut their doors if they're not able to be creative and, you know, drastically shed costs for unprofitable programs they offer. So we're going to see mass chaos, probably not right away, because you do have, like, if you have a four-year dental program at one of the most expensive dental schools in the country, your D2 to D4 students are still able to borrow unlimited Grad PLUS. So it's only your first-year students that you might have way lower revenues for. So in this first fall year, maybe let's say your revenues per year get cut by 50%, like 50% lower revenues than what you were getting, right? Well, you know, if everybody else is paying the same, your whole college's revenue didn't go down by 50%. It maybe went down by like 13% or something like that, right? Because it's only one cohort that got slammed on the revenues that you're bringing in. But every year, you know, the revenue you're getting from those classes is way lower than it was for the year before. And so 3 years from now, your whole college is bringing in 50% less money because you can't finance it through private lenders because they won't do it. What does that mean? You're going to see massive costs. You're going to see degree restructuring. So for example, I would expect the DPT programs to be redone as master's degree programs in short order unless something big changes soon. I think that you're going to see different kinds of experimentation and innovation for schools to cut costs or get people out faster or possibly risk sharing with private lenders, or they might even pledge some of their assets or endowment in exchange for getting, you know, lower interest rates for their students or, you know, less strict underwriting terms so they'll be able to actually get the loans instead of need a cosigner. So it's going to be a big mess and nobody has a plan. I mean, I've talked to people all the time in the higher ed space and everybody's sort of like, we're trying to figure it out. Some people have played some interesting loopholes around with like enrolling people in like summer terms to try to get them a loan so they get grandfathered in, but then they only get grandfathered in for 3 years and not four. So they'd have to find private loans for their fourth year if you're like a med student, for example. So it's just a big massive amount of chaos, right? So if you wonder, why am I into amateur astronomy? It's because I get to look up and forget about all this stuff for a little bit. Just kidding. But I encourage you to find a hobby. You deserve one. Find something that's fun to do that's not your job. Because if you don't, you'll get into high-fee private real estate syndications from websites that make huge commissions on pushing this stuff on people. And I think you should spend your time doing something more fun. I don't know. Like, everybody wants to be involved in real estate until you actually get involved. And then it's like, oh, some people still really love it and do great. But I think that a lot more people want to get involved in these sort of weird side hustles than maybe actually should be involved in them. That's a topic for another podcast, to be honest. The good news is there's still going to be pathways to achieving great things in school. There's still going to be pathways to be able to finance your degree for some people, and some people will not be able to, and that's not good news. But, you know, we have to be strategic and smart with what the rules based on what they are. And, you know, if you're in your second year, you've already borrowed or farther along than that, you know, finish it out. Take the grad plus, roll the dice. You know, you're much better off getting your degree than not, no matter what it takes to graduate. And then if you're, you know, entering first year student, do what you can. You know, talk to us if you are really confused. If you have people that ask you questions and you don't know what the answers are, send them to our website, send them to Student Loan Planner, tell them to book a consult with us. Send them to the Student Loan Planner podcast, like this pod here. And if you have questions about anything that's happening this fall, anything that's changing with the student loan regs, it could be about this, or it could be about something that applies to you specifically, check out studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and leave a voicemail for the show, and we'll listen to some of your questions live on the air in a soon-to-be-released episode. Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your week. Again, if you needed to check private student loans, that's studentloanplanner.com/private. Thanks, everybody. Take care.